Well, hello everybody. Welcome back to A Place in the Conversation. My name is Dan Neiswanger. I'm the spiritual formation catalyst for A Place in the Conversation. My good partner, Nick Everhart, is not with us today. But today we are making a place in the conversation to talk about AI. If you're paying attention to the news, if you're listening, you're certainly starting to hear a lot more about AI. And we thought it might be a good idea to spend a few minutes talking about exactly what AI is, about how it's going to shape and influence our world a little bit. And then probably more importantly, how to have healthy conversations about AI, because it seems that every time we start to talk about things that have just the tiniest little bit of a political dimension to them, and an AI is going to end up being regulated in some way, some shape, some form, we start to struggle, and we have a little bit of a harder time having those conversations. And then lastly, we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about how to help our children go through and navigate new technology. And we'll spend a few minutes talking about that. And so I'm joined today by Luke and Chris. I'm going to give them a minute to introduce themselves. So Chris, would you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, hey, this is my third time on the podcast. The previous two, I was here as a worship leader and a physicist. And now I'm here as, I guess I'm an AI expert. I work in artificial intelligence as a day job. After this, I have nothing left to talk about. So I think this may be my last episode. Those are the things I know best. I've been working in data and, you know, machine learning, modeling, all sorts of analytics, most of my professional career. And now I lead the R&D function for an artificial intelligence startup. We're not at the cutting edge, but you can see it from where I sit. And so I had vast plans for my research program in December, and the arrival of ChatGPT in late December, early January, totally upended all of that. And nowadays I spend my days talking to GPT and trying to figure out what I can make it do.
Okay. All right. And Luke, would you introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's Luke Zubrod. I am not an expert in AI, but I am one who has thought a lot about culture, community, mm-hmm. and public policy. Chris and I got to know each other well working at the same financial company some years ago. At that company, I did public policy advocacy for a period of a handful of years or more. And more recently, work for Square Roots Collective here in the Kennett Borough in Pennsylvania, and really just trying to answer the question of what does it take for a small community to thrive for everyone.
Yeah, thank you. So Chris, why don't you spend a few minutes and help us understand what you're seeing? You know, as you are on the front lines, and I think it's fair to say that that's where you're at. I mean, That's where you are. And talk a little bit about what you've seen since last December as things really kind of took off in the world of AI, and what maybe you see in the future.
Yeah. If you don't mind indulging me in a little bit of a history lesson,
yeah.
I think that'll be helpful in framing this. So the models that have captured the collective imagination these days have a long heritage. Natural language processing, which is the field of machine learning that this falls under, has been around since the 1950s. You know, the first chatbots were, they were written, they were rules-based, they were very sort of simple to comprehend. And of course, you know, not interesting enough to make the headlines at the time. At the same time, the first machine translation models were built around then, where everything was dictionary based. It was a lookup, you know, this word maps to this word or that word based on some condition. All the while, what's happened is that we've, as I would say, as a scientific, academic, even nowadays open source community, come to understand that we had to get better at both language and modeling. and the compute power had to pick up enormously. So one of the things that's been true about machine learning and AI in the last 25-ish years is that it's gone through several hype cycles. So when I was an undergrad, you know, all the literature was about, oh, we have these things called, you know, tree models or support vector machines, and they're going to solve all these problems, right? And bio and, you know, protein folding and all these other kinds of things. And that was maybe partially true, but you couldn't actually deliver on any of that because the computers were too small. You couldn't do anything. So there was sort of this AI ML winter. And then you get to roughly 2014, 2015, and there was this model published called ImageNet. And it was the first time, shortly after that, this model was the first model to exceed human capabilities on classifying images. And this has never happened before, really, at least at scale with a model. At the same time, roughly, the first papers on generative models were published, which GPT and its cousins, you know, by Amazon and AWS and all of that, they're generative models. So they don't, the old school models were what's called discriminative, where you show it something, whether it's text or an image or audio, and it has a limited set of things that it can do. It can say it's a cat, it's a dog. There's a famous one where it's golden retrievers versus fried chicken. That's actually a very difficult problem for computer vision models. But it can only say those things. It's a multiple choice test. It gets, you know, it's very limited in what it can spit out. Generative models, on the other hand, can generate, right? So you ask for something, whether it's in text. One of my favorite pastimes is, I'm not sponsored by them, by the way, but there's a platform called Night Cafe where you can go on, put in a prompt, and it'll give you 10 different images completely generated, right? It's something that no human has ever produced before. This is brand new novel content, although there's an asterisk on that, which we'll get to, I think, when we talk about regulation. But there's complete sort of freedom for these models to take what they've seen and generate new content. The other thing that I would say is that, again, back to those hype cycles, there's nothing new under the sun. If you have a smartphone, you've had Siri or a Google Assistant in your pocket for what, 5-6 years? The reason ChatGPT is so exciting is because it's actually good. Siri and your Google Assistant are not very good at understanding you. Limited set of things they can do. The other thing I would say is that there's a lot of drama about, and this is one man's opinion, there's a lot of drama about, you know, these models are going to take over the world, we're headed for the Terminator, we're headed for the singularity, where humans and machines sort of are at comparable levels of intelligence. I'll tell you right now, we're really, really far from that. I have a standard set of tests that I run on these models every time a new version is published. And actually, GPT-4, there was a new version published July 1st, and they dramatically changed its functionality. But anyway, I run these tests, and one of them is to ask it to solve like a sophomore in college level math problem. And it'll sure enough spit out an answer, but it is dramatically wrong. It's sensible, like line by line, it's very sensible, but it gets completely to the wrong place. And I think one of the things people don't understand about these models is they don't reason. There's no reasoning going on. When the models are trained, they learn, if I see these 1,000 words, then here is the likelihood of every other word that I know. And if you go on chat.openai and ask it a question, it's going to take your question and then say, okay, this is the most likely next word. And then I add that word to the original question and I say, okay, the second word is now this, right? And you can even see it, right? It's spitting out one word at a time. That's how it does its inference. So there's no reasoning going on. It learns what's most likely in human language. And by human language, I mean the internet, which is problematic in and of itself. But there's nothing, you shouldn't be scared of AI. You should be scared, or at least cautious of applications of these types of AI. But the AI itself is, I don't know, it's sort of like a really cocky intern who, you know, just finished their junior year of college will convincingly lie to you when it doesn't know the answer.
I think that's very, very helpful to understand the history and to understand, you know, kind of where we are. the cocky intern. I'm not so sure I'm comforted by that, right? I've met a few and I'm not so sure I like that. I'm not so sure that's comforting. And here's some of the places that I've found it. And I've been surprised at how I've found it to be helpful. Yeah. I was filling out a job, posting a job on Upwork, you know, and they said, would you like us to write this for you? Mm. And I thought, well, you know, just for kicks, I'm not going to take what you write because it's going to be garbage. But sure, go ahead, write it. And it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Like they took the information that I had already entered and they put together a job posting in mere seconds that would have taken me probably the better half of an afternoon.
Yep.
To go ahead and put together. And, I edited it so it sounded like me and it reflected a little bit more of me.
Yep.
But man, it certainly was helpful there. And, a little bit of behind the curtain here for the A Place in the Conversation podcast, you know, all the titles are AI generated, are chat GPT generated now.
Good.
You know, I just put in a few things and then I pick and choose from the different 10 different things they pull up because it's better use of my time than waiting for, you know, just wisdom or insight to strike me.
Yep.
So I do see that there's all kinds of upside. It's not always right. And then there's how do we as a people navigate that well, right? And I think that's the challenge. I don't know about for you, Luke, as you think about all this, what do you see as some of the upside and then some of the challenges moving forward?
Yeah, maybe I'll start with the latter. Because I think one of the challenges in sort of people formation is that ChatGPT makes answering questions and doing homework a lot easier for kids.
Mm-hmm.
And learning is best facilitated by doing hard things and not just getting easy answers. You have to think and reason and develop skill in sort of really the hard work of knowledge acquisition and problem solving. And so I guess one of my concerns as I think about this and applying it, with kids who are going to come into a world where AI has the potential to make things a lot easier for them, is how do you sort of form someone to be wise and thoughtful and well-educated?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one of the upsides of this tool is that it makes wisdom the essential commodity,
yes,
the essential thing, you know, so if AI is going to, subsume a lot of the, a lot of activities that otherwise would have been done by humans, accounting work, coding work. You know, so these things that require skills, increasingly AI will help make that easier and easier. And so where do I, as a young human, think about my ability to add value in the world? I think wisdom is one area. I need to sort of, you know, as Chris noted, it doesn't reason, but I, as a human, can reason.
Yep.
Creativity is another one. I mean, you know, that's not all roses here, as Chris, you know, talked about the example of AI playing a role in sort of generating photography. So, you know, AI will subsume some of those sort of creative contributions to the world. But I still think that human creativity, there'll always be a place for. So, I think that's good. I think humans flourish when they're doing things that require creativity and wisdom and not just doing tasks.
Yeah,
I think you make a really great point, and it triggers two thoughts in my head. One, back to when you were saying, you know, we learn Learning is a lot like weight training, right? Like you lift heavier and heavier weights, right? And that's how you get bigger muscles. Learning is the same thing, harder and harder tasks, new skills, integrating different skills that you've learned, right, is a whole other type of learning. When I was in high school senior, took calculus. Professor was super old school. You couldn't use a calculator, no graphing calculators. So I knew how to do things when I got to college that my, you know, my cohort with me couldn't do without their calculators. And you could argue that, you know, maybe they just sort of took a shortcut and they were at the same place and they could move faster in certain ways. But when it came down to deep reasoning about what should you calculate instead of what is the calculation, how do you do the calculation, I was light years ahead. And then when I actually figured out what the calculation was, okay, anyone can learn how to use a graphing calculator. ChatGPT is just a tool in the same way, right? So kids should learn how to write an essay for themselves. But once they learn the structure of an essay, okay, you know, outline it. And I love your use case, Dan. Have it fill out, you know, something that scratches most of the itch and then clean it up, make it look like yours, put your voice into it, add the things that it's missing. Nuance is not a strength of these models. They're very much generalists because they're trained across the entire internet, which is not specifically about anything. The other thought that you triggered was, and this relates to what I was saying about why this has captured our imaginations. I played on a community softball team this year, and it was a combination of sort of people from white collar and blue collar backgrounds. Everyone knew about this thing. Everyone was using it somehow. And one of the people who struggled most with it was, I think he just finished his sophomore year at Westchester. Wants to be a history professor or a history teacher, like high school, secondary level. And he was very frustrated because it was hard to write lesson plans that you couldn't just solve by prompting in the right way with GPT or whatever else. And I told him, like, look, you're thinking about this all the wrong way. Now you have the opportunity to, one, you know, teach them those first level questions, right? Now you have the opportunity to get more creative and figure out what's the second level question that on its own this model can't answer. It's going to be much more interesting. It's going to be much more challenging. And the students will get to that second level question by solving all of the first level questions and then integrating it for themselves. So I think there's going to be some bumpy times ahead for certain verticals. Education is one of them where I think this is just going to be really tough. But this is a step stool that allows a lot of people get to a level that they weren't going to be able to get to on their own, at least not without a lot of help and effort.
Yeah. I think there's one, you know, you and I have talked about this other times, right? There's one piece where, for me as a pastor, you know, I struggle with this, where it's, yeah, you know, you can put some things in ChatGPT and all of a sudden your sermon is ready to go, and that it removes the it removes the discernment process, it removes the time of prayer, it removes there's so much that it takes away. But you could have a finished product and stand up and it's going to sound good, but it's going to be devoid of anything that is of significant value and where your life has been changed or where you've, you know, any of the stuff that really truly matters is not going to be there. Because you've taken this shortcut. And for a while, I really wrestled with that. And I really thought, man, I'm against this for that reason alone. And then I started to thinking, yeah, well, you know, there came a time whenever the internet was first out, all of a sudden they kept all these preaching websites popped up. And, you know, for $12 a month, you could sign up and you could download all these sermon outlines. And there it is. And it's like, there's nothing new under the sun.
It's always been possible.
It's always been possible. And people have been doing it. And the challenge is, I think, is to raise up people who can say, okay, here's the resources and use the resource well. But, you know, stay true to your sense of calling, stay true to your sense of purpose, stay true to, you know, what it is that you're about, and just don't take the easy. Use it as just another tool. I don't know. That's kind of where Because there's nothing we're going to do to stop it, right?
I mean,
so that's just kind of, that's a piece.
That's an interesting question. I mean, it goes back to Luke's point, right? Like, wisdom becomes the really valuable thing.
Yeah,
questions are so easy to answer now that the real skill is figuring out what are the right questions to ask.
Yeah.
And again, that changes the way we educate people because, you know, most of my, I went to school for, 27 years. Almost all of it was about, here's the question, figure out the answer, right? And that's good for a world where coming by answers is not so easy, but we don't so much live in that world anymore.
Yeah, so matters of the heart, I think, is kind of the category that you're speaking into.
Yeah.
You know, how can a machine navigate something that is a matter of the heart, whether it's a sermon? And an example I'll give is I have a son who just graduated from high school and is going off to college. And when he graduated, I wanted to write him a letter, words of wisdom for the future. And so I started taking notes on, you know, what are the things that I want him to go to school and really kind of value and pursue. And so I wrote him a letter, and I thought, boy, how do I take a kid who doesn't read a lot of the emails I send him? You know? This is a generation who has attention span for texts.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, well, I'm going to turn my letter into a poem. So I have done some of that, not good poetry. My sister's a poet who actually writes poetry. This is something well short of that. So anyway, I went through that process and then I thought, well, why don't I see if ChatGPT can turn it into a poem? And so ChatGPT did, and it did a better job than I did in the poetry conversion process. And then I said, ChatGPT, can you turn it into a song? Because I thought, man, if I can sort of distill this to its essence and put it into a form that he will appreciate and absorb, maybe then he'll consume it. So anyway, I did give him the letter. And he's a musician, so he's in this realm of creativity. And I said, Grayson, will you write me a song based on the letter? And I said, which version do you want? Do you want the ChatGPT version? Do you want the Luke poem version? Or do you want the letter? And he said, I want the letter. Give me the letter.
Okay.
And I'll make
cool.
a song based on that.
That's very cool.
I like it.
Very, very cool. You know, my son is visiting. And we were sitting around the house last night. And he brought up something that I had totally forgotten. But he said, Dad, do you remember they used to pay me to read books? And I started laughing. I said, no, I'd forgotten that. And, you know, his fiance is with him as well. And she started laughing and she goes, you paid him to read books? And Joseph, my son, goes, yeah. He goes, I got paid to read books. He goes, but I couldn't just read them. I had to write a report. And so I had to write, you know, I had to read a book and write something up and then give it to Dad, and Dad would pay me to read books.
Yeah.
And you know, and his fiance looked at me, she goes, why would you do that? And I said, man, because I wanted my son to learn. And I wanted my son to learn from certain books. And, you know, a lot of people pay their children to take out the trash. Okay, that's good. Thank you. Helpful. But, man, I want you to learn and I want you to grow. So that's kind of what it was. And, you know, that's kind of how I got a chuckle out of it last night. But it's one of the ways that I found to kind of help my son kind of navigate the world that he found himself in. As the two of you parents think about helping your children navigate ChatGPT, how are you doing it?
This is kind of on brand for me, but I'm telling them to use it for everything, to figure out what it's good at, what it's bad at. And I'll confess, even in cases where, you know, my kids' teachers have said, you can't use AI with this, I'm like, you should, because, again, back to that calculator analogy, the people that understand what they're trying to do and also can do it faster with the tool are the people that they're getting ahead. And this is a really interesting one. Again, I was talking about the blue collar folks on the softball team that you don't have to have specialized knowledge to get in there. It's a website. It's free. You can pay for an upgraded version, which is better, but you can get a lot done with the free version. And so there is almost no barrier to entry for this thing. And there are a lot of applications that folks I think aren't thinking about as well. So most of what we do is we ask it questions, but you can turn the tables. You can tell it, ask me questions, generate multiple choice questions to help me learn a topic. And it will do that very fluidly. I'm sort of doubling and tripling down on, you have to get good at this tool. And you have to also get good at discerning when it's, I think, critical thinking along the lines of what you're saying about wisdom is going to become, it's going to become the forefront of what humans need to get better at, because more than ever, the internet is flooded with nonsense, and a lot of it now is just easy to generate nonsense. And so getting good at prompting the tool, getting good at understanding how to fact check it, and getting good at synthesizing what it outputs into something that really matches what you want to say, not just copying and pasting, because like we said, it's always been possible to cheat. That's where I've put the emphasis for my kids.
How about you, Luke? How have you done that?
Yeah, I get lost in just listening to Chris's answer to that question, because I struggle with a push and a pull. The world is changing, and I want my kids to be able to be cognizant of that change and able to change with the world. And at the same time, I have anxiety about those changes and just their ability to not just sort of take the answers served up by ChatGPT, but you think about any of these AI tools as sort of scooping up and averaging in some way or filtering a broad base of information that has a lot of philosophical assumptions built into it. It has, it may be biased in certain ways.
Yeah.
And has a lot of junk built into it, and that's true of the internet as we know it today as well. And, I pay for subscriptions to, newspapers that I think are trying to, do good reporting, because I value kind of a curation mechanism, that helps me be able to see the world and think about it in a clear way. You don't really know sort of the source material that's kind of informing the answers coming out. And so I guess that's a note of caution in a way, is, if you're developing answers as an AI tool that's drawn out from a body of knowledge which has some embedded flaws, won't the answers then sort of carry those flaws as well? And how do you kind of sort through that? So I guess that's a concern I think about with just sort of wholesale relying on the information that these tools generate.
And so how's that impact the way that you work with your kids to, help them navigate that?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I'm not sure that, I think that's it's kind of a moral formation question in a way. You don't kind of answer that question by use of the tools, you answer it by discussion about the tools.
Yeah.
Okay.
And framing it as tools, right?
That's
a starting point right there.
Yeah, good. I mean, for parents, it's one of those things that they're going to have to be good at and get good at talking about. And it's one of those things that, your children are going to know how to, do this better than most parents are, by the time they're seven, in the next few years, right? I mean, this is just kind of, it's the way it's going to be. And so as parents, not paying attention, not learning, not having interest, not playing around with it a little bit and figuring out how to talk about it, probably not the healthiest place to be.
Agreed.
But being able to understand it a little bit and then figure out, okay, how can I help my children make the best use of this tool is probably the healthier place to be.
Yeah. I feel, I don't know, we've all lived through or are living through, you know, major technological revolutions in our lifetime, right?
Yeah.
I was 15 when the internet became a thing, and now in my working life, generative AI is becoming a thing. My parents gave me no advice on how to use the internet, and that was a mistake.
Yeah.
But, you know, they didn't, you know, it wasn't, they didn't need it, right? Yeah. To get through their lives. They didn't need it. And I probably didn't either at 15 or 16, but yet it was there. So I think that point about being proactive is really important. Even if you don't understand the technology, you probably need to understand the technology.
Yeah. Yeah. Or find somebody that does, right? Even if you,
find
if you
somebody
don't
that
and
does.
You don't want to, you know, find somebody who does.
Yeah, if you're listening to this podcast and you want some tips, here I am.
Here you are. Here you are.
I would like to send my kids to the Chris Wells School of AI.
Prompt engineering.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. That's not bad.
Right.
Yeah. And one thing, the last thing that we said that we were going to talk about for just for a few minutes is the way that our collective communities are going to end up talking about AI. You know, Luke, you want to talk about that for a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I suppose, you know, it's already, you know, we're just sort of encountering with some heartburn the pain of social media as it's evolved. And
yeah.
So there's a lot of attention. You know, the Surgeon General just put out a warning about the potential damaging effects of social media, particularly on adolescents.
Duh.
Yeah. Here we are, 25 years into the boom of the internet, and, you know, obviously a lesser time since social media. But, you know, it's hard to regulate sort of the genie once it's out of the bottle.
Yeah.
And I do think that, you know, government, it can be overreaching at times. It tends to be also late to the game. And I think there is a lot of discussion around AI as, hey, we sort of missed the boat on regulation with social media. How do we learn lessons from that with AI?
Yeah.
And so that discussion is afoot. And I think, you know, as it relates to a community conversation, anything that Republicans and Democrats come together to regulate sort of creates, you know, an opportunity for polarization. So I think that, you know, this AI, which feels like a foreign animal to a lot of people, or it's something we're just starting to get familiar with, you know, it doesn't feel to me yet in the conversations I'm a part of like it's a highly polar conversation. But I think it's a matter of time before it becomes
it
a polar
be.
Conversation.
Yeah, it will be. Yeah, it's interesting to see, which actress was it? Sarah Silverman filed a suit. And I think it's probably going to become a class action suit where her, I think it was her autobiography or whatever, was clearly part of the training data, which shouldn't have been possible in a world with copyrights, right? That should have been behind a paywall. It shouldn't have been out on the internet. And asking the question, like, whose fault is that? Like, okay, it was on the internet. It should have been. Probably shouldn't have scraped it and added it to the training data, but how do you know, right? It's, what is it, 100 terabytes of data? Like, no one's looking at all of that. So those questions about what's in bounds and out of bounds, I think that's probably where the polarization will,
yeah, so
will
there's
weaken.
Intellectual property, that's
intellectual
a part
property.
Of this
yep.
discussion. Whose intellectual content is it generating its product
yeah.
from, and how do those people get credit? And is there a mechanism for compensating them? You know, we sort of went that through that with music. And when I was in college, everyone, when I was in college, stole music, right? There
yeah.
were these file sharing Napster type programs where, you know, and then Apple came along and started charging $1 for a song. And, you know, it started to take this unwieldy, uncompensated intellectual property morass and bring it back into the system. I don't know how that happens here, but I think that's part of this discussion. and, you know, sort of just the privacy element when it gets something wrong and it's personal to you.
Yeah.
There's sort of like a libel element to that.
Yeah. Who's responsible?
And so I think that's part of the discussion. I'm sure there are many chapters of this discussion that I'm not sure what all of them are.
Yeah.
Yet.
There's a new one every day.
I think the one that you touched on earlier, Luke, was the, who's overseeing this whole thing? Who's deciding what's in and what's out, and who's, you know, that's going to be a huge discussion, because all of a sudden it's going to be, well, you're censoring me, but you're allowing them to put their content in. And it's just, there's going to be all these opportunities. I kind of sense that there's going to be opportunities for people to just, become very upset and see it differently. And the conversations about it, we don't do those well right now. And I think it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be one more place where we're going to be challenged to have healthy conversations, where we can listen to each other, where we can respect each other, where we can recognize, look, this is just a tool. And
again, back to critical thinking being really important. I had someone who's important to me in my life ask me the question, are you familiar with this AI stuff? And I was like, yeah, you know where I work. And the second question was, are you afraid of it? And I'm like, no, why are you? And if you ask the five whys, and at the bottom of it, it's, well, the particular species of news that I pay attention to told me that it was scary. It's like, that's not a good reason. Play with the thing. You won't be scared of it after 5 minutes if you ask a hard enough question.
Yeah.
And you don't have to go that hard. So I think that's a big part of it too. Like you said, like, you have to be familiar with it. Form an actual opinion of your own, and don't just be a parrot.
Yeah. Chris, how do you, I'm mindful of our time, but you know, you have the kings of this technology, its architects who have told us that we should be scared of this.
You're thinking like Hinton from Google, right?
Yeah. A bunch of them signed a letter.
Oh my God, that thing.
How should we interpret those messages?
Let me give you the cynical answer first. You know, so you have folks testifying before Congress about how this should be regulated. You have Elon Musk leading the charge for, like, we need a moratorium. All of that, again, this is the cynical answer, one man's opinion, super self-serving, because Elon wants to build one of these things. Other people have already built them, and they just want to create a moat for themselves to create the fast fall, stop the fast followers from catching up to them. I don't exactly know what the doomsday stuff is all about. Like, I think there are real concerns, right? Like, I think the internet in the near future could become entirely unusable, like just impossible to find real content and dig out answers from it. I think Google's already gotten worse in the last 6 months. That's dangerous. There's also a problem there in that the next generation of these models will be trained on that internet, and that will make those models worse, because it's not real content. It's not real English language. It's some approximation of it, right? So you get this degeneracy. And I think there are, like I said, anyone with enough money and access to hardware in the cloud can train one of these things. Like, some of them have been leaked. Some of them are just totally open source. And OpenAI, for all of its potential flaws, did a really good job of figuring out a novel way of sanitizing the output of these models. So while at some times that means that the output is very vanilla and sort of middle of the road when you'd like it to have an opinion, I have not seen scary stuff come out of it, and I prompt it more than most people. Maybe I'm not creative enough with my prompts, I don't know. But not everyone's gonna do that. And some of the folks that have the most money and the most control of hardware are bad actors at, you know, sort of the international level, right? So I think there's the potential for really clever, really negative uses of this that could destroy individual lives, that could render things like, I mean, think about what happened with, what was it called? Cambridge Analytica during the 2018 election. That just becomes infinitely easier if you're good at using these models and you've taken the guardrails off. So I think there's a potential for damage. But again, other than, you know, the lack of usefulness of the internet, I think all of this is damage that has been done and could be done before. It's just now more accessible to a lot of people, especially if they have the resources to sort of do it themselves, roll their own, as they say. But I don't think regulation solves that. That's how I think we should be investing at sort of the federal level in responsible AI research, explainable AI research, right? It's really hard to get ChatGPT to show its work. You have to be really good at using it to get it to explain to you, like, okay, why did you say that? And sometimes when you do that, it's like, oh, you're right, I made a mistake. So it tries to show you its work and it can't because it didn't do any work. It just hallucinated. But I think explainability, responsible AI, uncovering bias in data sets, in a data set that large, really, really tough. And that sort of extra loop that OpenAI did with their model was very expensive. So if you could find ways to automate and improve that, that would be very beneficial. And then investing in, our educational system, right? So I think, teachers are great. They work really hard and they don't get paid enough. But they're often behind in adopting technology. Like the stuff that my kids use at school is what it's a decade behind in terms of functionality and the look and the feel and what they're going to face in the real world, unless they work in finance and then those people are all Luddites. but I think the government should be investing in how does education change when you have a really powerful language model that you can do a lot with and knowing whether you should or shouldn't.
I'm sort of coming back as I sort of process things both of you have said here on the regulatory topic to just the role of content moderation. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what you were raising, Dan. I think the norms for government around kind of novel technologies, think about things like high frequency trading or crypto. Like these are some sort of financial technologies, that have come out that have caused damage in certain ways. They're useful in certain ways as well. And, I think government tends to not want to sort of take a heavy hand at first in a new area of technology. Yeah. And so they tend to emphasize transparency as the thing they want to solve for through regulation. So what are we talking about with AI and transparency? And it could be, what are the guide rails? You talked about the guide rails that exist in OpenAI and ChatGPT to sort of curb the ugly content from being spit out as answers.
Yep.
So that's a form of content moderation. Mm-hmm. And so, the first step is transparency. What are, you platform, what are your guide rails?
Yeah.
And I think the potential for, difficult discourse among a polarized people is what should your guide rails be?
Yeah.
And each of us are going to have different opinions about how severe government's hand should be in dictating what those guide rails are.
And it's going to be really important because one of these days, I think within our lifetimes, you'll be able to hit the button on your Roku or your Apple TV and say, give me a mashup of Seinfeld and Star Trek Deep Space Nine, and it'll generate an episode for you. Come back later after a cup of coffee and you'll have your episode to watch. And if violent content, if sexual content cannot be produced by these models, they're not going to generate very interesting TV, right? It's not the kind of stuff we watch, right? We want that drama and the sort of the dark side of human interactions. And so it's so hard to write legislation that doesn't have unintended consequences. Yeah. And I think it's going to be really, really tough in this context.
So everybody, listen, thanks, Chris, Luke, for being here and starting what I think is going to be a very long conversation. I don't think these conversations are going to end anytime soon. And just for you who are all out there listening, as parents, as individuals, this is probably one of those times when you need to be paying attention to the new technology that's out there. You need to be playing around with it a little bit. Yeah. Chris, what's the website that would be easy for people to get to?
chat.openai.com.
And, you know, get on there, and I'll put a link in the podcast, and just get on there and play around with it a little bit, and get familiar with it, with what it is, what it isn't. And then just start to have conversations, especially with your children, about where they're using it, how they're using it, how they might use it in a way that would be beneficial and helpful. And be able to have conversations where you teach them how to think critically about the answers that come back, and how best to navigate the introduction of a new technology into our world. Any closing thoughts that either of you have?
Just thankful that you're doing this. I think it's an important conversation, and I think it's I appreciated the opportunity. I don't know how well I did, but to take something that is a bit abstract and turn it into something that people can do something about. So
well,
thank you.
I know that I know more. So if I know more, then other people will as well. Luke, you have a final thought you want to share with us?
I just can't wait to go to Chris Wells's AI boot camp.
Okay, great.
Like, that could be a real thing, couldn't it?
It really could.
Set up tents and laptops in the backyard.
Yeah, it really could. And so watch for that, because that may be a real... That may be a real thing.
All AI-generated campfire songs.
Yeah. Okay, there you go. Well, everybody, listen, thanks for listening. And until next time, may you be abundantly aware of the spirit alive and well and at work in your world.